Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
That might have been the greatest crosstalk that I've ever been a part of. I don't know about Mason Island. They probably have had a lot better crosstalks, but for me personally, I couldn't stop laughing. Is Mason bringing on Brian Kamenitsky's son and having him come on? Oh, you can't beat that. Can't beat that. Appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll go till 9 o'clock tonight. I will say this. It's different, and it's going to be different for a long time, but it's obviously great to continue to be able to do these shows. Just to give everybody a quick rundown of what we got for the show tonight. Two running backs that were, you know, you thought for a while were going to be kind of the face for the two home teams in the NFL. They're both gone, and we're kind of in an interesting position here as we transition in the NFL, and that continues to become a bigger and bigger topic. We'll talk about just how good this season's going to be in the NFL with all these big-time faces and big-time names changing jerseys. Ramona Shelburne will come on in a little bit as well. She had a piece. I started mentioning it yesterday. I talked a little bit about how Ramona had this great timeline of what was going on in the NBA and the coronavirus testing, how quickly they got to the coronavirus testing. So we'll get kind of in depth in that. Chris Mannix, who works for Sports Illustrated, it's going to be an interesting, some big time decisions coming for the Summer Olympics, how that's going to affect the NBA, and really how there can no possibly way be a Summer Olympics this year in 2020. It's got to get moved to 2021. So we'll hit on that as well. And then LeBron James feared if they lost in 2012, it would end the Big Three era with the Miami Heat. He was talking about that yesterday when he was live on Instagram. Okay, let's start with this. So we all kind of know these last couple of days, at least this week, the big story has continued to be about just NFL free agency. And where are some of these big-time players going to land? And what players are going to get cut? What players are going to get signed? What players are going to get traded? And I think there's this domino that has begun to fall. And I want to just stay here in LA for a quick second. So yesterday we didn't have answers on Todd Gurley and where his next location was going to be. We did know that it wasn't going to be the Los Angeles Rams. And we pointed out yesterday all the different reasons why Todd Gurley wasn't going to be playing for the Los Angeles Rams. Today, he signs with the Atlanta Falcons. 1 year deal, he'll get $6 million plus $7.5 million from the Los Angeles Rams. And it's good to see how quick Todd Gurley was picked up in free agency. And I say that only because, look, Gurley was a part of the Rams since 2015. You know, obviously last season didn't go as planned. And a lot of that probably just having to do with his left knee injury. So for him to be still the third highest paid back in the league, he's top three right now in running backs in the NFL. And you know, we went at nauseam yesterday. I thought Kellerman kind of presented it so great. You're just kind of sitting in this league today, the way the league is structured, and just the ability to franchise, you know, running backs specifically. You're getting such great years from running backs when they're so young, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25 years old, that you don't have to give them this in a ridiculous amount of money. And that still happens in the league, but I think for the Rams, it was a smart decision for them to cut Todd Gurley. And you know, you heard Bill Plaschke talking about it a little bit about it yesterday. Earlier in the week, Kirk Morrison had a similar take on it, that it probably just made sense for the Rams to move on. That's exactly what happened, but it's nice to see Todd Gurley find a new home and get the type of money that he's going to get in Atlanta. Melvin Gordon. He goes to the Broncos, 2 years, $16 million deal, 13.5 of that is guaranteed. And I say that, look, a year ago, you'd have probably said Melvin Gordon before he held out, sat out four games, didn't play for the Chargers. But you would have said, look, give me some of the faces of the Rams and the Chargers here in L.A. Todd Gurley and Melvin Gordon would have been two names that you mentioned. A lot has changed since then. So for the Chargers, obviously no Phillip Rivers. He goes to the Indianapolis Colts. But Melvin Gordon, Todd Gurley, both of those guys gone. And I hope I hope both those guys have the type of success that they were supposed to have here in Los Angeles. I hope they have that type of success when it's all said and done, but it's going to obviously have to come from two different teams. Tom Brady officially with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So we got kind of all the details of his deal, and then Tom Brady goes on Instagram to, you know, a couple days ago he wanted to congratulate or wanted to thank his time with the New England Patriots. Today was all about turning the page. But he's getting 2 years worth $50 million, all guaranteed to play for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Includes another $9 million in incentives, $4.5 million this year and $4.5 million next year. I'll say this. I know we're probably a long way away from NFL. I know there's going to be an incredible amount of time before we actually get to watch some NFL football. And I know there's a lot of other sports that are in between that got canceled. So we're supposed to be in NBA mode right now. We're supposed to be in NCAA. Opening night for the Giants and the Dodgers was supposed to happen on the 26th. So we know there's a lot of other fantastic sports that we're not going to get a chance or an opportunity to watch. But I will say this past week, listen, there's been some great storylines coming out of the NFL. I was excited that Tom Brady left the Bucs the Patriots to go to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I say that because it just creates kind of a different storyline. Think about watching the Patriots without Tom Brady as quarterback and think about following Tom Brady. Think about following the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for a quick second. I mean, that's kind of mind-boggling to even think that. Phillip Rivers going to the Colts. I think that's just interesting to see another player, a top-notch player that everybody knows going to a different team. So you got a lot of that going on right now, and in my opinion, it just makes the league that much more interesting. For the two local teams, the Chargers and the Rams, I think a lot of question marks. But the beauty is this. The beauty is still the free agency, we're still in the middle of it. The NFL draft is obviously going to be big, and that's towards the late part of April. Things are still going to develop. Things are still going to happen for both the Rams and the Chargers. Kind of walking into SoFi, this is my personal opinion here, walking into SoFi, not that appealing yet other than the stadium, because I think the two teams, we don't really know what they will be in the NFC and the AFC. Kevin Demoff, they put out a tweet, the Rams did, that a new logo and colors Monday at noon will be revealed for the Los Angeles Rams. So there's kind of a little bit of your football fix right there. Melvin Gordon, Todd Gurley, both signed with different teams today. One goes to the Broncos, one goes to the Atlanta Falcons. And then this Tom Brady kind of ripple effect, that part will still continue. All right, we come back. LeBron James feared a loss in 2012 would end the Big Three. He thought maybe, just maybe, Pat Riley would have broken up that crew and that this could have kind of changed his legacy. I want to talk about that when we come back. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
LeBron talking about his legacy.
Come on now. Nothing's going to affect his legacy. So if you guys remember this, it actually brought me back. So LeBron on Instagram, or they say IG, the cool people say IG. I still spell it out completely. I actually say on Instagram.com. That's the cooler way to say it. So LeBron was on www.instagram.com and LeBron's on IG and he's having basically doing a live chat, which I love it. By the way, I mean, think about how hungry people are for not just sports right now, but just connect with their athletes. You know, these athletes that mean everything to them. These athletes that we've all got a chance to kind of watch, and we've watched them succeed. We've watched them fail. There's a connection we have to all these athletes, and we don't even know them. So the fact that, you know, LeBron inside of his house with his daughter sitting on his lap, you can hear the family in the background. I mean, it does not get any more organic than that. So LeBron's on IG, and he's talking about specifically, he's taking questions. One of the questions that comes up, they're talking about the 2012. So remember 2011, that's when LeBron joined the Heatles, as we call them, Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, and LeBron James. They lose in the first year to Dirk Nowitzki and the Dallas Mavericks. one of the biggest upsets, I think, in the NBA. And here's LeBron the following year. They got to go to a game six against the Boston Celtics. They're down 3-2. It's in Boston. So that means you got to win the next two games. This is in 2012. You got to win the next two games in order to have a chance to just get to the NBA Finals and win their first championship. Remember, Bron hadn't got a chip by then. And everybody just remembered LeBron is saying, not two, not three, not four. You know, he just that famous line of him claiming that they're going to win so many championships in Miami. So they're down 3-1. They're down 3-2. They go to Boston, and I watched those highlights today because I had to kind of go back for a second. Like, wait, which game are we talking about? And LeBron said he feared if they lost in 2012, that would end the Big Three. Basically saying that Pat Riley would look to potentially kind of move on from where they were. First of all, let me say this. Impossible Pat Riley would have broken up that trio. How are you going to break up that trio? That is arguably one of the best trio in the history of the NBA. I'm not saying it's the best. I'm not saying it's top three. But it's one of the best trios that the NBA has ever had. And LeBron saying that it could have affected his legacy if they don't win that series or if they don't win that championship, I actually agree with him with that. I agree. He had in that game, I think he put up 45 points. He had 30 in the first half and maybe 15 rebounds, something like that. In Boston, in game six, he was unstoppable. I think he hit his first 9 of 10 shots or 10 of 11. I will say that if he lost that game and if the Miami Heat lost that series and LeBron James still did not have an NBA championship, I agree with him. It definitely would have affected his legacy. Now, his legacy really became the legacy that he is after he won that championship in Cleveland. When they are down 3-1 against the Golden State Warriors, Golden State had won 73 games that season. It's the first championship in 52 years for Cleveland. I think a lot of people thought when he went to Miami, he was taking the easy way out. I was saying the same thing when that happened, and you could agree with it, disagree. It really doesn't matter. Everybody's got their own opinion on it. It's almost similar when Kevin Durant went to the Warriors. Everyone had their own opinion of KD. Why are you trying to go? Why are you taking the easy way out? And I felt like at that time, that's what LeBron was doing to go try and get an NBA championship and play with his buddies. And it's Miami and Cleveland wasn't putting together a winning product for him to win an NBA championship. But going along that, I just look at that one specific, I thought what created his legacy, even after he won in Cleveland or even after he won in Miami, there was still always kind of a question mark about LeBron James. Can he do it in Cleveland? Can he do it for the team? Can he do it without Dwayne Wade, let's say, for example? And when they won that championship in 2016, that was LeBron's legacy to a completely different level. LeBron's got nothing left to prove. By the way, if he wins one with the Los Angeles Lakers when hopefully we get back and we're playing some basketball, that will be one of his best legacies, or that'll be one of the best check marks in his legacy. He could potentially win 3 NBA championships with 3 different teams and 3 finals MVPs, which has never been done before, and especially at this age. But just listening to LeBron yesterday and on Instagram, first of all, I love that he was doing it. And second of all, just to hear him talk about how important, how key that championship was going to be for them to, for him to personally kind of continue to build on his legacy. And we know what his legacy is today. Ramona Shelburne coming back. She's going to give us a timeline for the NBA. It's a fascinating article right now on ESPN.com talking about how the NBA was prepping for this coronavirus. Back in mid-January. That's when they were just kind of starting to get more information on what was going on in China. By the way, they had 200 employees working in China. Remember, they have offices in Shanghai and in some different parts of China. So she'll give us a timeline of what kind of has gone on from then to where we are now. That's coming up next. Stay right here. This is The Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, welcome back to The Sliwa Show. Ramona Shelburne. We got Ramona. Ramona hopping on the broadcast, and a couple things that I want to get into, Ramona. She had a great article yesterday on ESPN.com, how the NBA moved so quickly on the coronavirus testing. Ramona, in this new world that we're living in, how are you doing?
I'm good. You know, I think I was thinking about it. I was like, you know, I need to make sure that I get out every day. I need to go. We go for long walks with Daniel all
That's
the time.
Awesome.
I know all the dogs in the neighborhood. I know all the, I'm starting to get to know my neighbors a little bit because they, you know, sometimes you walk by and people, they kind of come out because they're probably kind of bored at home too, right? You know, I realized I felt like I had a lot of energy the other day, even though I stayed up all night writing and stuff. And I was like, man, I'm not that tired. And then, like, today I got a little, I was like, oh, I need to take a nap in the afternoon because I was tired after, you know, not getting a lot of sleep the last couple of days. But I realized, I'm like, I think it's because I'm not driving anywhere. Like, I don't have my commute.
Oh,
I don't have to, like, you know, get dressed or go anywhere, right? Like, I've just been home working and on the phone. And as long as I just keep out and talking to people, I feel connected to the world. And, you know, it was actually really nice doing radio the last couple of days because you sort of, you know, you have this connection to people in the mm-hmm. world. So, I think I'm doing pretty good so far, except for my, you know, overall sense of dread and doom, right, that I think everybody has.
Okay, are you watching, because I heard you and Mason talking a little about this yesterday. Mason was trying to get away from the news a little bit. Do you find yourself all over it, or are you starting to distance yourself a little bit from the news? I'm all over it. I just keep watching it and every day thinking the world's going to end.
I mean, you know what it is? I can't really watch TV during the day while the baby's awake,
yeah,
right? Like,
yeah.
I'm just busy, mm-hmm. you know? But when we put him down, like, I'll watch for like an hour or so. Or I think I'm more reading than watching. Like, so I'll watch for like an hour or so. I'll flip back and forth on CNN. I like to watch CNN or MSNBC. So I'll watch, and then all of a sudden I'll realize, like, oh man, did I just have, like, you know, as an hour turned into 3 hours? Like, what just happened there, right? Or I'll have, like, you know, I'll be on the phone with, like, friends, and we keep having the same conversation, and then I feel my chest tightening, and I feel you know, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's that anxiety coming up again. You know what I mean? Like, the more I watch it, the more I talk about it, you get that anxiety. I mean, I have this thing, I don't know where I went down this one rabbit hole last night, like, you know, what happens if I get sick? Like, who's going to take care of the baby? And could I pass it to the baby? And, oh, my God, you know what I mean? Like, we just, you know, what do we do?
Listen, I'm with you. I've been doing the same thing. When the show ends, I'll typically get home, and, you know, obviously a little bit later, it's 9:30, 10 o'clock, whatever the case is. I'll start watching news, and I'll start. Now, Mason Ireland have me on a movie rampage, so I got it. They have, like, just a list of movies that I have to see. But in between that time, I'm doing the news. But you know where I'm probably consuming it the most? In the morning. In the morning, I'm getting up, and I'm like, all right, what better way to start off your day than just reading about all the terrible things going on in the world?
Oh, man.
Probably not the best
idea.
Probably not the best idea.
Yeah, you're cup of coffee in the morning with your daily sense of doom and gloom, huh?
Hey, you know, and here's the thing. That's not something I used to do in the past, but it's I also kind of find this, it is you know, just reading a lot of the different articles and listening to the news.
Yeah.
I mean, we've never been through this before. So there's a curiosity. There's a fascination of, like, what is happening here? You know, like, so I think that has a lot to do with it. But it is kind of our new norm right now.
I'll tell you what I've been trying to focus on. I've really been thinking deeply about, you know, I had, hold on a second. I had a sense when I was, I visited, like, the Anne Frank house, mm-hmm. you know, and I visited a lot of places, you know, that were, you know, from over in Europe, you know, during the World War II, where they were concentration camps. I was thinking about all the things that previous generations lived through. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, even my parents' generation, they lived through Vietnam, like, where people were getting drafted and killed and their friends were going off to war. I mean, I don't know that our generation has really lived through a lot, you know, and it kind of got me thinking, like, man, like, you know, I visited the Anne Frank house where she and, like, seven other people, they lived in this house, in this, like, cramped room, you know, this cramped house, like, you know, like, in the walls where they had to be quiet all day during the day while there were people coming and going. And they did that for, like, years and years and years. I mean, if they could do that just to, like, stay alive, like, man, I think we could be socially isolated for a month and not freak out, you know? Like, there's just things, human beings have had to do stuff like that. Like, you know, I mean, and people have, you know, through over the years, like, we've just, like, surrendered our ability to fend for ourselves, to, like, grow our own food and to do our own, you know, to really take care of ourselves. We've become so interconnected and dependent on each other and dependent on modern life that it's like we've almost, like, lost the ability to survive on our own. And, like, you know, this is going to be good for all of us. You know what I mean? Like, we're going to get through this. We're going to all appreciate each other more. We're going to really, all the stuff that you took for granted before, like, you're going to really appreciate it again. Guess how excited I'm going to be to go to a movie again.
Oh,
you know what I mean? To go to a basketball game again, you know? So I'm just trying to stay focused on being healthy, keeping my immunity up, right? Just by working out, trying to get sleep. Like, today I was tired and I was like, you know what? I could, to push through, but I didn't have anything specific to do. So I was like,
that's great.
I'll take a nap in the afternoon. Let me take a nap.
Oh,
right?
That's great. You know one thing, like, one thing, Ramona, that I kind of, just like you're saying, I really do feel this. We'll come out with a better appreciation, like you mentioned. I think we'll be more knowledgeable on a lot of things that maybe we didn't pay attention to, and that could be as easy as spending 20 seconds of washing your hands, you know, things like that, like those little things that we just don't even think about. But I think also, too, like you just mentioned, you know, I'm curious about with all the different work, and hopefully it just gets better and better. And I know a lot of people are being laid off or they're losing their job, and hopefully this changes down the road. But all the work that's being done inside your home, I hope that people are working out from home, or they're, I mean, think about how creative people are having to be. I think you were mentioning yesterday on Fast Track or somebody was, maybe it was Lindsay, about drinking. People are drinking through, like, FaceTime or whatever, and there's 7-8 people on the chat. I hope that by the time this is all said and done, that we also have the ability to know that, man, we could be probably so much more productive, and you don't have to go into the office every time. Like, you could still get so much done in life, and it could be surrounded by your home. I know over time it's been, okay, you wake up in the morning, you get out of your house, and I feel like it's bringing us back to our home and maybe even having to spend a lot more time with our families.
Yeah, and I'll be real with you. Like, I was thinking about this, you know, the other day, like, I had a kind of a difficult pregnancy at the end, right? The last, I don't know, I would say 2.5 months of my pregnancy were really hard. I had a health complication where they didn't tell me to go on bed rest, but it was pretty close, right? It was really painful. And I came into the studio a few times, but there was a lot of times where, like, going into the studio was, like, the only thing I could do that was fun, you know? I stopped going to TV a lot. I stopped going anywhere. I was just home a lot. And then once the baby was born, I had a really difficult recovery, right? I had a C-section. I had to heal from, like, major abdominal surgery. That was no joke, right? And I remember it was really hard on my mental state too, because I'm like a person on the go. You know what I mean? Like, I like to travel. I like to go places. I like to be whatever I want to go be, right? And it was hard just being totally laid up, you know, like the last few months. Like, I mean, there were days, I remember I did a whole story, Alan. I was having a really hard time right in and around free agency when the Lakers got LeBron. I did every single phone call for, like, this story I wrote, like, from my bed.
Oh my gosh.
I was, like, laying in bed talking to, you know, Kobe Altman, the GM of the Cavs, and I was talking to, you know, Laker folks, and I ended up turning a story about, you know, the Lakers getting LeBron. I think I wrote it a little bit in bed. I wrote it, you know, from the couch. Like, I could, you know, I'd sit for like an hour or two, and I had to go lay back down. I mean, and so I remember that experience kind of got me to this place where it was like, sometimes you just have to let go. Sometimes you have to just, like, say, like, I can't really be everything that I want to be all the time. And you have to have this, like, acceptance. But then you also have to have a gratitude for what you still can do. And I don't know, I think the whole experience really changed me because, like, I don't really, I'm not saying I don't miss going out. I'm not saying I don't, like, you know, I'm not like, oh, I wish I could go to the office, or I wish I could go travel and get on a plane and go someplace. But it's like, once you kind of learn to let go, and then it just, like, just appreciate things, like, just go for a walk every day and just appreciate your neighborhood. Go for look at the, you know, you start noticing the weather more. You start, you know what I mean? Like,
of course, things slow down.
You know,
I feel like I feel like life kind of just slowed down for everybody a little bit. And Ramon, I haven't even got a chance to talk about
That's
your article
yet. We can do another segment if you want.
I was going to say, if you're good with it, let's take a quick commercial break. We come back. I really want to get into this article that you wrote yesterday for ESPN.com. Stay right here. Ramona Shelburne coming up next. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, welcome back to the Sliwa Show. Ramona Shelburne hopping on. You know, Ramona, it is kind of funny there. Here we are. So much of the time, we spend so much time talking about sports. That was kind of nice. We took a little left turn there, and I think that's fair in this in these times that we're in right now. But I think the overall theme is just kind of appreciate the moment, appreciate whatever predicament situation you're in, try and find some of the good from it. And I will tell you this, last couple of days, pretty much almost all week, just going outside in the middle of the day and going for a walk, what's better than that? Literally, I don't think there's anything better than that.
Yeah, I have these routes that I go on around my neighborhood. So it's like, we always go see the horsies, and like today, we saw some other horsies. I didn't even know these horsies were around, but we just went right up to these new horsies. That was exciting.
Got it. I'm sure the little one is loving life with his mom. Okay, yeah. I want to get into this article. So you had yesterday. I thought it was such a great timeline. How the NBA moved so quickly on coronavirus testing.
Yeah.
Because I think where most people think. That game between the Utah Jazz, Oklahoma City Thunder, Rudy Gobert gets tested for COVID-19. I think that's where everything got serious. But the reality is, and this is what's so great about the story, the NBA in mid-January, I don't want to say on top of it, but obviously was following very closely to what was going on in China. If you could talk a little bit about just some of the timeline from where we are today and where things kind of started for the NBA of starting to educate players and owners of what was going on the other part of the world.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I thought was really striking when I started, I was like, calling around. It was a big story to say, like, hey, how are these teams getting these tests? Right? Mm-hmm. Like everybody was really angry about it. And, you know, my job is to find out that answer. And everybody I would call, you know, five, six teams, you know, they said, well, you know, we've been getting these memos from the league office for the last month and a half saying that we needed to set up protocols for each local market. Like each team and each local market had to have protocols to start dealing with this. And so your team physician would deal with local infectious disease specialists, public health officials in your area, and also a facility, or like a location, like either an academic center or a lab, where if anybody showed any symptoms or if they came down with something, you could sort of either quickly get tested or be evaluated whether they should be tested, right? Mm-hmm. And I said, really? Like who was writing these memos? And they said there's a guy named David Weiss. And he's an SVP, he's a senior vice president at the league. He's normally in charge of injury reporting, like concussion protocols. And I would assume he's actually probably one of the guys behind load management. You know, you have to justify if somebody's sitting out, okay? He's a lawyer by trade. He's not really a health expert, but he's just become that guy. You know, other things like he deals with things like how do you keep the locker room clean for staff infections and MRSA, okay? This is normally what his job is, but once things started to really heat up in China, the NBA had 200 employees that they deal with in four different offices in China. And those employees were being uprooted. Like they were being told to work from home. They were being told to quarantine. They were seeing, you know, the death and destruction caused by this virus right in front of them. And they had frontline people there saying, hey, this is terrible.
Wow.
This is really terrible. This is not the flu. This is something you have to take very seriously. And I think, you know, I know David Weiss was in daily touch with, there's a guy named Derek Chang. He's the head of NBA China. Adam Silver was in very close touch with all these folks. And it got me thinking, like, man, like, you know, this NBA season started with controversy in China, right? Daryl Morey's tweet heard around the world. And the relationship between, you know, the United States and China and the NBA in China has been obviously a little much more tense. But, you know, I found out that one of the people that Adam Silver regularly consults with, this guy, his name is Hank Paulson, he's the former Treasury Secretary, and he's actually a Republican. He's a, you know, his son, David Paulson, used to work for the NBA. And when things were going, you know, when things were really, really, really tense in China this fall, you know, Adam Silver had a lot of conversations with Hank Paulson. And he's just a guy in his late 70s now who just wants to help the world and give advice and the way he sees things, right? And then he basically said, you know, look, the future of the world depends on the U.S. and China working together. Hmm. And that was his message to Adam Silver over and over and over again. And so as tense as relations between the league and its partners in China and, you know, the broadcast in China were at that this fall, the NBA really made sure to have a connection still, to keep that connection. And I think because that connection was so strong, they understood the gravity of the threat in front of them. I traced back the memos that were sent to all the teams. You know when the first memo addressing coronavirus was sent out, Alan?
So
January 31st.
How about that?
Okay.
How about that? Okay. And Ramona, just to hop in there, I mean, just it. What this is what I find the article so fascinating is because, you know, I think it was March 10th was the game with Gobert. Yeah. March 10th, March 12th.
March 11th.
Okay, March 11th. That's the game, and I felt like, okay, that's when we all kind of shook. You're talking about January 31st memos coming out, and then even before that, midway through January, them kind of staying afloat to what's going on in Wuhan specifically. Go ahead.
Yeah, I went back when I was writing this, and I when I realized that when you sometimes as a journalist, you just kind of have to like look back very closely at the timeline, okay? And you know, a lot of the massive quarantine that took place in the city of Wuhan, right, which is in the Hubei province.
Yeah.
That's where the epicenter of this outbreak was. That was January 13th, okay? Hmm. And you started seeing much more massive closures right around January 20th, starting around January 20th. And then I noticed that, like, the Disneyland parks over in Asia, those both closed on the 24th and the 25th of January. Hmm. So you saw massive quarantines, closures, self-isolation orders, starting to happen between basically the second 2 weeks of January. So the NBA and its employees were, you know, dealing with that. And then I kind of like looked back at January and I was like, oh my God, David Stern's funeral was January 21st.
That's right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And Adam Silver was writing the eulogy right then. And you know what happened on January 26th? Kobe Bryant was killed in a helicopter accident. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you imagine like what it was like in the league offices when you're dealing with those two tragedies?
Oh yeah.
While also dealing with employees overseas and studying and bracing for what you're getting the sense is going to be a global pandemic, and how do you prepare your league? Like, I had no idea all of that was going on when we were covering everything, you know, with surrounding Kobe Bryant.
Sure.
I mean, did you have any consciousness?
No,
not really.
No idea. Maybe, you know, hearing about it here and there, but not paying attention to it at all.
Yeah.
Just to kind of keep going on this, then you've set up this timeline. We get to March 11th. Obviously, that's when Rudy Gobert and that game gets canceled, and that's really where the NBA kind of shuts things down. I thought you had some interesting conversations, and this maybe I think you could help with listeners. So there are people out there that bring up the question, well, how come some of these NBA teams do have access to get tests and so forth? Because we know there's been, I think, 8 or 9 teams now that have been tested. Can you kind of explain that? And I know there's a few different angles you can take from it, and I know there's specific basketball teams that have partners that are UCLA Health or Mayo Clinic, and obviously that's the Lakers, this Minnesota Timberwolves. I think the Cleveland Cavaliers, that's the what clinic is that? I think it's actually the Cleveland Clinic.
It's just called the Cleveland Clinic, yeah.
Can you give us a little bit of, because I know there's more to it than just saying, well, why are they being tested and others aren't? Yeah. Can you give a little bit of that background?
Yeah, so I think what I've been told, and we can agree or disagree, okay? but on whether this logic holds, this reasoning holds. But the idea is NBA players are quote-unquote super spreaders, right? They are highly mobile, highly social. The Jazz had played 6 games in 9 days in different cities, okay? The number of people they were coming into contact with at each game, each day, hotel was like exponential. And that's not to say that, you know, flight attendants don't see a lot of people or, you know, there aren't other professions like this, but I think there's this recognition of how social and mobile NBA players are. And there was also this sense too that, if they found an infection on one team, there you kind of had to assume it was all throughout the league. Like, I remember when Gobert tested positive, I forget who did this calculus, okay, but there was a chart that everybody put up of like, okay, he could have been infectious for 14 days, so here's all the teams the Jazz have played in 14 days,
wow.
And here's all the teams they've played,
yep.
And it was like all 30 teams, literally all 30 teams. Mm. So it was like as soon as one player had it, they had to shut the league down because that, you know, the degrees of separation between that one player and every other player in the league, and then every other person and, you know, coach, trainer, whoever it is that they come in contact with, I mean, it's pretty slim. And there's that sense that, you know, Gobert was symptomatic and he had reason to be tested. They didn't test him right away. They tested him after his flu A and B came back negative. Strep came back negative. Mm. He had a fever of 100.2, and he had chills, headache, dry cough, like you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
And he had a dry cough. And he said, and he apparently also had a he got a test for all these other upper respiratory infections. So generally, the protocol is test for everything else first. If they don't have any of those, then you know, and they still have all these symptoms, and you have. Was possibly a known exposure because he'd had house guests from a high risk area. I assume it's France, but I can't report that. But, then you have a reason to suspect it. Hmm. And the Oklahoma State health officials, they ordered that test. Like that wasn't just like, you know, the Jazz saying, hey, we really want to get him tested. I don't feel good. They ordered it. And I think, you know, what scares the living daylights out of me, okay, mm-hmm. is like, you know, what's the most famous game Michael Jordan ever played?
The flu game.
Right?
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Rudy was feeling better by the time that game in Oklahoma City was scheduled to go. He was going to play that night. He was like, I can go. I'm good. You know, and how many other players were doing the same thing? You know what I mean? Like
sure.
for probably weeks. And like, I know for myself, I was feeling like we shouldn't have been playing games for about, I think I was very uncomfortable going to Staples Center for games. Starting about that Bucks game, you know, I think that was the March 6th
Friday.
And then March 8th
Friday.
They played
yep.
the Clippers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like being there. I didn't like being in those crowded locker rooms I was walking around with a napkin. I was wiping everything down. I was washing my hands. I wasn't touching my face. I mean, I was like seriously heeding the rules there or the recommendations. And, you know, if Gobert and I've, you know, just traced back the math on this. And this is why it's so scary for everybody who was, you know, around back then. You know, if he was symptomatic on March, I guess it would have been 2 days before when he was started to be symptomatic. So that would have been March 9th and 10th, right?
Yep.
That means he likely contracted the virus about 6 to 8 days before that.
Wow.
Okay. So think of how many people he came in contact with 6 to 8 days before that. I mean, it just, and how many other people, you know, Marcus Smart, who's announced, right? And Kevin Durant and the other Brooklyn Nets and, you know, the two Lakers and the, you know, the
Philadelphia 76ers,
some members
of their organization.
You just start thinking like that each one of those probably got it 6 to 8 days before. That's the median and, you know, period between when you have it and you show symptoms. I mean, thank God they stopped the NBA when they did. I really do. That's the one thing it's just such a blessing because, like, even one more day, that's a whole other round of exposures and potential infections.
Ramona, it's fascinating. I appreciate, first of all, It's a great article, and I appreciate you taking some time to kind of talking through the timeline of it, but how the NBA moves so quickly on coronavirus testing. Hopefully you can enjoy your weekend and you get some good time with the family and you get some great walks outside, but I appreciate you doing this before the weekend, so thank you very much.
Yeah. I'm gonna go order some takeout tonight.
Yes.
I've been cooking a lot, but I think takeout is good because you're supporting your local businesses. So we have a couple of places that we, you know, just Postmate from all the time. Anyways, I think I'm going to try to like get takeout from them every other day. Even though that's a little much, right? but I think, you know, I feel good trying to support the local businesses, just ordering takeout, doing Postmates, whoever delivers it. And then we have our protocol of like, okay, you know, you don't greet the Postmate at the door. You just leave it there, just leave it on the front porch. I'm going to spray it with my bleach spray. I take it out of the packaging. You take it out of, you know, we all have those protocols now, right?
You got it down. You have it down to a T.
Yeah, you know, I do fever checks of everybody who comes in the house. You know, I check my temperature twice a day. Like, I mean, this is like a strange new normal, isn't it? But you know, it's also like, you know, we as humans have been through a lot. Yeah. Our generation probably hasn't experienced anything like that, but we're about to go through it, and we're going to get through it. And we're all going to be better for it.
Ramona, great stuff. I appreciate it, and great message, too. That's a perfect way to end it. Thank you for hopping on, all right?
Yeah, thanks, Alan.
All right, that's Ramona Shelburne right there. This whole timeline fascinated me. It really did. There's so many layers to this, and one day we'll be able to put all the pieces together, and hopefully it'll make sense. Right now we're in the middle of it, so it doesn't all make sense. When we come back, I do want to kind of take a couple layers from what Ramona Shelburne said, and also, are you going to try and explain to me that we're still going to have an Olympics this summer? Come on, that's impossible. Let's talk about that coming up next. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, so Friday night, obviously the climate is much different than it has been in the past. A lot of times we hop on Friday nights, we're joking around about going to a club and things along those lines. One of the things I do love is that so many people, you heard Ramona say it as well, people are trying to, as best as they can, support local businesses, local restaurants, and so forth. So I know for me, that's something that I'll try and do a little bit more of as well. Out of all the things Ramona and I talked about, and I know I can kind of sit here and talk about her timeline for the NBA and the coronavirus, but probably the thing I enjoyed the most is when her and I are talking about how she has time to be at home a little bit more, spend some more time, you know, obviously with her son and her husband, and just kind of be with the family. And I do think if there's some positives that we could take out of this whole thing, right, is things like that. I went for a walk today, and this has kind of been the case for most of the week. How beautiful is it outside? And what I'm referring to there is just getting that chance at noon or at 10 a.m. or at 2 o'clock to go for a walk and just go breathe some fresh air. Those are the things as we spend a lot of time looking at the news, and obviously everybody knows what's going on in the world right now. Those are some of the small things that we could take away and be happy about or be content with. And then everything else we have to kind of just wait and see how it plays out. So Chris Mannix from Sports Illustrated, he's coming up next, and I want to kind of set up conversation that we're going to have. So we had a great article in Sports Illustrated that just kind of highlights the 2020 Tokyo Olympics and the entire basketball world. Look, there could be some incredible changes that happen simply because the NBA season can get pushed out. And with that, the question continues about what's going to happen with the Olympics. Thomas Bach, who's the president of the IOC, told the New York Times, cancellation not on the agenda. This is, I've had this kind of, I don't know if we want to call it an issue, but I've had this kind of in my head a number of different times around this whole cancellation of sports with COVID-19. And I'm going to use the Big East as a perfect example. You guys remember the night after the NBA decided to postpone the season, put it on hiatus, cancel it, all the different terms that we can use. If you guys remember that specific night, other sports kind of started following. Some of them lagged, but some of them didn't have, you know, immediate games coming up. Well, for college basketball, it was the conference tournament. And I remember even saying, like, there's nobody's going to be playing games tomorrow. Of course they're not going to. The NBA is canceling its season or suspending it. The Big East isn't going to play. The Pac-12, the ACC, none of that's going to happen. And I was as aggressive as I can possibly be and as critical about the Big East simply because they played a half of a game. That didn't make any sense. And even over the last couple of weeks, I remember, or the last 10 days or so, the English Premier League was like, oh, no, we're good. We're going to actually play these games these upcoming weekends. Like, no, you're not. Of course you're not going to. It's not smart. It's not safe. It's careless to do it. So then that trickle effect happens. UFC, probably the latest one, now canceling a couple of their events. UFC president Dana White, we listened to an interview he had about a week ago, and he's like, no, we're testing, and it's going to be safe, but now they're postponing some of their tournaments as well, or some of their matches. So that takes me to the Olympics, 2020 Olympics. How many different countries are obviously participating in this one event every 4 years? How many different people are traveling from around the world all to be in Japan and specifically Tokyo? Just think about all the different people and athletes and fans and those that are proud of where they're from and their countries all gathering into one location. And then when the Olympics are over, then they will all go back to their homes. There's a great quote in his article, and I'll get to Chris Mannix with this. He talks about 11,000 athletes, more than 500,000 fans, pack them into one area for a month, and then send them back to 200-plus countries they came from. If that is not a recipe, and I know that that's far enough down the road where things can definitely change, but just as a country, as a citizen, you think governments are going to be comfortable with that? You think that there are individuals, or even let's just say fans of the Olympics, that are comfortable that in this climate they still try to put together a 2020 Olympics? And maybe the Olympics are doing it similar to what the NBA is doing, where they say, hey, we'll kick the can down the road for 30 days and then we'll kind of reassess everything. But nobody thinks there's going to be basketball anytime soon, and nobody thinks that there's going to be baseball, or forget about spring training, but the regular season. Nobody thinks these events are coming back anytime soon. But the Olympics is such a unique event where literally everybody is coming from all over the world. And then when they're done after those 30 days or so, they're going to go back to their country. The worst idea to me sounds like having the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo, Japan. In September, I got a chance to go to Tokyo. I was in Japan and just got a chance to visit. What an amazing country, amazing country. When I guess you could say just kind of see such a unique place in the world, is unbelievable. Those are like life-changing experiences when you get the opportunity to do that. But I think it comes down to this. Right now is not the climate to be traveling around, and we know that. And I don't think that's going to change that much in 60 days. I'm not a doctor. I'm just following the news like everybody else. And by the way, I hope I'm wrong. Maybe in 60 days, everything is all great and dandy, and everything can move as planned. But I just do not see a scenario that plays itself out that the International Olympic Committee and the Olympics, including Thomas Bach, who's the president of the IOC, that they figure out a way to hold the Olympics. Here's a simple solution. Kick the can down the road. Do it the summer of 2021. That's simple. 2020 is different for everybody. But 2021, maybe that's your opportunity to do it again. Everybody in the world has paused their life, and it's going to be paused for a little while now. I just feel like the Olympics and their specific committee, it just seems a little, no, we're good. No, everything's going to be okay. Chris Mannix is the perfect person to talk about on this specific topic. And here's a great thing. He's going to tie it in from the basketball perspective as well, because we do know that, obviously the NBA sends the best of the best the best Americans that, you know, represent our country to play in the Olympics. So Chris Mannix coming up next. We'll get into this conversation and I'll get his thoughts on what he thinks about the potential of the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.